This is your normal host, DJ Schweitzer, and your occasional, every once in a while stand-in guest host, Adam Maloney, back again to fill in for the ill Jeremy Lance. How does it make you feel to be the guy that we only call upon when Jeremy is just too sick to actually make it in?
I think it's an honor, and I hope that, Jeremy, I hope you're feeling better, and you can get back quickly.
So that you're not in this position once again. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're an occasional listener to the show, Adam has stood in for us on, this is probably your third or fourth round through, I think, at this point.
Yeah, third or fourth.
Yeah.
Not sure. It's been a while, though.
It has been a while.
Jeremy's had a good run of health few years. So
we didn't have to dip into the reserves. But unfortunately, we've had to do that. I will give the positive update that Jeremy is not dead. He survived his heart surgery, which we are all super stoked about, and is making an excellent recovery from what we can all tell so far. So we'll hope for his continued improvement and that he'll be able to join us in the not-too-distant future. You'll also notice as well that in Jeremy's absence, we're struggling with microphones because I don't do microphone things. But that's all right. Adam and I are going to make it work for this evening at a bare minimum. And we've got a different show to bring to you tonight than what we normally do, because normally we do rundowns of the league, everything that's kind of going in the Premier League, MLS, all that type of stuff. Tonight, Adam and I are kind of going a bit off the cuff, and we're going into kind of the soccer that you and I live in. Because outside of me having opinions about professional soccer, most of my time is spent working in youth soccer now, and you have worked in the college ranks and the professional ranks as a coach as well, mainly in goalkeeping side of stuff, but you had an opportunity to work at a lot of different levels, and I think we're going to take some time tonight to talk a little bit about the way that we both kind of look at the world of coaching and its impact on it. So I'm glad that we have this opportunity to actually get together and talk, because Jeremy can't offer these opinions. I can't even necessarily offer some of these opinions because you've had an opportunity to work with kind of a higher level player than I've worked with, at least at a coaching side of things. So we're excited to have you on board and contributing, even if Jeremy can't do it as well.
Yeah, thanks. I hope I can provide a little bit of insight. I don't have any answers. I always say I don't have any answers. But I've got thoughts, insights, maybe some ideas. Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, let's kick things off just since we last touched in, because it's been months probably since we had our last podcast. Poor Ken Brew keeps having me on 700 WLW to talk, and he's like, when's the next show going to be, DJ? And I'm like, I don't know, Ken. Maybe we can just get some beers and ignore that we've not actually done one. And that's mostly what Adam and I have done tonight, has been drinking beers and reminiscing, going through our current coaching situations, trying to navigate our wives also being coaches and how that impacts our lives. More so you right now, I feel like, than me.
Yeah, that I volunteered completely on my own volition to coach my daughter's 9-year-old team this spring. So it's a new experience, new group of people, a bunch of things to learn from my perspective on communication and values and how people learn and how people train and how they have fun. So that's been really interesting, and I'm up for the challenge.
Well, given that the most recent group of players that you've been working with are like college age men, it's not even boys. I mean, they are boys, but they're like literally men. 9-year-old girls is a bit of a heel turn.
They're men. The way that these guys train anymore, from 17, 18, 19, 20, the work they put in the weight room is light years ahead of where we were, I think, when we were in college.
Yeah.
We got in the weight room a little bit, but there was never really a plan. Like, these guys go in to get work done, and these guys, when they come into school, a lot of times they're ready to perform right away, which is I mean, just physically a different type of specimen than we ever saw. So, yeah, these 9-year-old girls are different, both physically, mentally, but man, they work hard and they want to please and they want to follow directions and instruction, and figuring out the best way to communicate to them is what I'm most looking forward to, I think, in the spring season.
Well, I'm sure your wife is definitely looking for your communication expertise a little bit as you navigate the parental aspect of coaching, right? Like, there's, you know, each of you probably have your own unique strengths in the way that you go about being parents, and that doesn't always convey itself on the soccer field. I think that's like the hardest aspect of I'm too this spring coaching my daughter for the first time, which has been just a pretty surreal experience. And I feel like it's been a unique struggle to find a new way to communicate with my daughter that's not the same way that I have as like a dad. And I try to bring some of those elements into both aspects of my life, but I think it's been a really interesting challenge, at least for me. And I know that you've got at least a unique dynamic there too.
What do you think, as far as communication goes, like, what are those differences in how you communicate on the field versus as a dad, or like, having seen the game as a fan, as a player for so long?
Yeah.
How challenging is it to then relay those experiences, relay that knowledge to a group of people that you don't have that much in common with?
Yeah. Well, I think what's always so hard as a dad is, like, you know how your kid operates, right? Like, you know, we're 9-ish, 10, almost 10 years in now on being parents. Like, our oldest daughters are the ones that we're coaching right now. And you kind of know how they, like, flow and what they need to communicate with. But that style is, like, very personal. Like, you know, like, a lot of times you're so used to managing that relationship in private. And sometimes coaching is such a public endeavor, right? Like, when you speak to a kid, there's 10 other, 12 other, 13 other sets of ears that are listening to you potentially as well. And so sometimes with my kid at home, I can be very direct and be like, what the hell are you doing? You know, right? Like, you can take a little bit more of that liberty because you've built up that, like, capital with them as a parent. Whereas those other kids don't have that, like, relational aspect with you built up, at least at the stage I'm at with them now, where if I were to say that to my daughter, whether that's appropriate or inappropriate to speak to my 9-year-old that way,
that's up to you.
Yeah. Right. But that, they may not be ready to hear that out of a coach, like, speaking that directly to a kid or that frankly. And two, like, my daughter's extremely sensitive, so I have to kind of delicately make sure that she knows that I'm not being too hard on her when I feel like I'm taking extra strain to treat her just like all the other players. So I mean, that's the challenge that I face, at least as I look at parenting and coaching at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. As far as it, your parental relationship is more often than not one-on-one.
Yeah.
But now you've got to manage that relationship within the context of a team.
Like, yeah, for sure.
Like, with my daughter's team, she's playing 7v7. So there's 10-ish girls there at any given time. Which is a consideration. Like you said, things that I may say to my daughter, maybe I can't say because I don't know another girl well enough to know if it's okay to say in front of her. Is she going to wonder now, oh, is he going to say that to me?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's, to me, it could just be a personal one-on-one thing.
Yeah.
But now I have to take the context of the team into account. That's an interesting point.
Yeah. Well, let's pivot a little bit into, like, coaching philosophy stuff. And I said it to everyone, this is going to be a different show than what we normally do. I think a lot of players and a lot of fans think very like straightforward about like what coaching is, right? Like it's you're selecting a formation and you're picking a team. And I think there are obviously so many more layers to what that experience actually is. And you and another a friend of ours who you've worked with a lot have really brought in just this really mental aspect to the game, and how much not just the mental side of it is important, but the community side of it is all these different pieces kind of fit together in the larger piece of what the team ideology is, and how important that community aspect is. And why I find this to be so compelling, at least from a soccer fan standpoint, is because of how important the community aspect is within soccer fandom. And I feel like there's so many parallels that like exist, and I think bringing that community and making that kind of central to a team is a lot of times really crucial to any team finding any true success to it. So what I wanted to talk to you tonight about is like where you guys kind of developed a little bit that like that ideology, and how you're seeing that play out as you bring that to the players that you're working with, especially in the higher levels of the game. But it, you know, we can obviously speak to that at the youth levels as well.
Yeah, I think it applies like in a lot of aspects. Coaching is just coaching, and it's the concepts are the same concepts regardless of what the level is.
Right.
You can implement a lot of the same things at 9 years old as we're trying to implement here, from a relationship aspect, a cultural aspect, a mental aspect, but the language is going to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to tailor it to things that are appropriate to each age level.
Yeah.
But I think that relationships, I think that team culture, team chemistry, whatever you want to call it, I think that those are more important. I'm not going to say as important. I think they're more important than whatever lineup you put out on the field on any given day, whatever formation you decide to play. Yeah. Those things can change. Those things a lot of times are outside of your control. But the relationships, which then lead to trust, are what I think the most important aspect of coaching is.
Yeah.
So there's, yes, a couple questions. One on the mental side, the other on kind of the culture side.
Yeah.
I think mentally first, what I try to do, and what the coaches that I kind of surround myself with, or have been lucky enough to be surrounded by, what we've tried to do is make the focus how mentally engaged we are at any given time.
Right.
So
go ahead. It's not necessarily like when we talk about mental side of it, right? There's your mental health aspect of it, right? Like, how are you feeling about this process? But there's also the engagement side and like where the player is on a buy-in process. And I feel like this is so important to the cultural aspect of what we're going to layer into, right? Is like the player's mental state and ability to buy into the culture that you're trying to set. I think that's ultimately where you're trying to steer this a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So what we actually, a couple years ago, at Wilmington College, we had guys fill out a sheet of paper before every practice and after every practice. The idea being that coming into practice, maybe they had an exam that they think they bombed, or maybe they got in a fight with a girlfriend or something. And the question before practice was, how mentally engaged are you right now?
So how long before training would you ask that type of question?
Immediately. The guys get their stuff on, they come out to the field, before the field, the paper's there, they'd fill it out And it was all anonymous. They each had a number that we didn't know, mm-hmm. but we could record the numbers. So they could put four bad tests. There was a place for notes or mm-hmm. whatever. And then after practice, same question. How engaged do you feel after practice? What's your level of mental engagement right now?
In the team and the session that you were just
in the session itself.
Yeah.
With it, so the thought behind this is that how do we grade ourselves
mm-hmm.
when we perform? Is it strictly on results-based performance, or should we be rating ourselves on how mentally engaged we are at any given time?
Right, maybe there's a new concept that's been introduced in the session that you're working on, right? That you as a player have never encountered before, and you suck at executing it. That doesn't necessarily mean you had a shitty practice, right? It could mean, hey, I was trying something new, and I felt like I was. What you're getting at is how engaged were you in that process,
right?
How difficult do you feel like it was to explain to the players how to answer that question? Was there a hurdle at all with that?
Yeah, because I think a lot of people by nature are results driven,
right?
And not process driven. So, our idea was that if we could judge ourselves on our mental engagement, then our performances would become more consistent. Our physical performances would become more consistent,
right?
Meaning. Can we get over mistakes quickly? If we can, then we're not afraid to make another one.
Right.
If we're not getting over mistakes, we're gonna start playing safe, conservative, and then what happens? Then you're in quicksand, you can't get out. If we judge ourselves based only on our physical performance, that means maybe we start the game at a 10 mm-hmm. out of 10. We make a mistake and we go, now I can't get a 10, it's a 9. We make another mistake, it's an 8. And,
right.
and it goes down and down and
think
down.
Like your player ratings
right.
type concept.
Right, exactly. But if instead of that being the focus, if it's after this mistake, can I get re-engaged?
Mm-hmm.
Then your performance can stay at a high level
yeah.
with it without decreasing, and then the physical performances become more consistent because mistakes aren't the focus, results aren't the focus. How engaged we are at any time becomes the focus.
Yeah.
So that in turn creates better, more consistent physical results.
Does that have like a finite limit though, right? How do you balance performance and results with engagement?
I think the more engaged we are, the more consistent the physical results can be. So you can, if you're focused on physical results, that's not saying that you can't have an outstanding performance.
Right.
You can have a 10 out of 10.
Right.
But is the next game a 4?
Mm.
Because something happened and we're only concerned. We have a an early chance and we blow it, and then we can't recover the rest of the game.
Right.
How do we respond mentally to that?
Yeah.
So I would rather have consistent 7s, 8s, and 9s, maybe 9s at the high end, than a 10 and then a 4 and then a 6.
Yeah.
Because then, as coaches, that makes our lives easier. If we have consistent performances, we can expect and predict a little bit better
sure.
What we're going to get. And I think as players, it becomes more enjoyable. It's not so much of a roller coaster. It's okay, this is my job. This is what I need to do. This is how I respond, and this is how I'm prepared mentally.
How accurate do you feel like players are at evaluating that? I mean, it's difficult to get into the mind of a player to understand how
right.
engaged they are. But you and I both, you can look at a player and be like, that kid's checked out. Like, I don't have to explain, you know, I don't have to go any further on this. He's not really doing anything. I'm going to get him out of that situation. Do you feel like players are honest in that?
If they trust you.
Yeah.
Which takes a lot of conversation, honest conversation, honest feedback, both coaches giving and receiving feedback,
right,
from their players. So I think once the trust is there, I think they can be honest.
All right.
Instead of trying to maybe impress a coach or say what they think they want to hear, which,
yeah,
I know that happens.
Oh yeah.
So it's work to create those types of relationships.
Do you feel? I feel like this is a good like transition point, because you build that trust and you get that, you know, ability to honestly evaluate. Where do you feel like that pivots into the community aspect of the team and the relationship? You know, the trust is the foundation of that relationship you have with that individual player, so that they know you're going to honestly evaluate them. How do you build that into the team as a whole? How do you expand that into the culture of the team?
By being ruthless with it, not sacrificing whatever the values are that you've chosen as the values of your team, regardless of how they're chosen. Sometimes they are the coach's values, that he says, I'm the leader of this program. These are my values, and these are the values that my teams will have.
Right.
That can work.
Yep.
That's a very
Sir Alex, like a very top down,
yeah,
orchestrated like culture. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
but here, but he knew
get,
what
get
he
on
was.
Bo- yeah.
He
like
knew
get
what
on,
he was, and
get
and
on
he
board
knew,
or
yeah,
get out, and it wasn't compromising. Right.
Right. And he was ruthless and consistent to the point where there were no surprises.
Right.
That value process can be democratic. That can also work. I think it just depends on the personality of the individual coach at the program.
Yeah.
But either way that happens, whether you involve the players in creating like what values do you want to be part of your program?
Yeah.
I think sometimes the question we ask is like, at this program, what do you want the way that you play soccer to say?
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody that you didn't know, if a group of kids came to watch you, what do you want them to talk about?
Right.
That's when they leave. How did they describe you? That's not that you won or lost. How did they describe the way you played, the way you acted? So those are all. There's a ton of different tools. There's a million different ways to,
sure,
go about that process, but having it explicitly defined, I think, is really, really important.
So one of the things that we talked about from a cultural perspective before the show, you and I mean, we're coaching at the young ages, but this translates so high up. Like, I feel like the teams that I found the most success in as a player did this a lot. Is like the positive reinforcement within that. And you and I grew up in an era where I feel like that was not something that was highly valued. And I don't know if I'm naturally was pushed towards this coaching style because that's what I would have preferred. But I feel like we grew up in an era that was very dictated, and I feel like is also dictated by the fact that no one were soccer players. Like, How long was it until you got an actual soccer player that coached you for the first time? Like, someone who played soccer,
yeah,
in their lives.
Like 15 years old.
Yeah, right? Like, before anyone you'd ever talked to before,
yeah,
had actually been in your shoes. But we grew up in, like, a very, like, patriarchal, probably basketball-driven society because of where we grew up, like, in the Midwest.
Mm.
I feel like my dad, like, grew up idolizing like Bobby Knight to a certain extent, and I feel like a lot of the coaches that I had at a younger age were born from that ideology. And I see so many soccer fans making the comparison between Bobby Knight and Sir Alex, and I feel like that's just a total like misnomer and like miscalculation of like the type of styles that they had, but also is on the nose sometimes too. And I feel like that's so antithetical to the more modern coaching styles that we're starting to see, even though I think their hearts were probably in those like similar situations and like motivations.
Yeah. I think part of it is that there's so much literature now that's available to read. There's so many coaching resources. There's so many high-level coaches that are accessible now and willing to talk, that I think it's easier than ever. It's still hard. It's easier than ever to kind of develop a coaching style and decide what type of coach you want to be if you want to put that work in. As far as positivity goes, I think it's science driven for me. Like if somebody makes a mistake and hears positive reinforcement, hey, get the next one. We'll get the next one. Hey, I know you got it. What, like next play mentality. So if the focus is I have to forget about that, what's my job now?
Right.
And we hear something positive from a teammate or from a coach, it releases dopamine in our brain.
Mm.
Which is a performance-enhancing drug. Like, it's a performance-enhancing substance. So we're stupid not to do it if we can release performance-enhancing chemicals that our own brain produces. Like, this isn't, like, crazy, like a...
Like, we know like the science is this, there.
It's there. Like, it's how psychology works. That's how the human brain works. I think that we're shortchanging ourselves, that people who don't have this as a focus could be shortchanging their teams, just because it increases our ability to perform.
Do you, man, this will probably be not cutting to you, but maybe cutting to, you know, people we've worked with or experienced this with in the past. Do you feel like those coaches that don't show a positive sign, that react negatively, that's like ego serving? You know, like your expectations have fallen, we've fallen short of your expectations, and I have to lash out because I'm frustrated at that that expectation not being met. Is that, like, do you think that's where that's being driven from a lot of times?
I think that's part of it.
Because I think about it, like, I'm a competitive guy, right? Like, I'm taking on my similarly 9-year-old daughter's team. It sucks that my daughter is not 6 days younger and then she could play with your daughter. But I think about that, my desires like sit so heavy in my mind sometimes, and I'm trying to constantly separate like what I want from like what my daughter wants or what my situation is with her team. Like, I'm not her coach in some circumstances, so I can't control the decisions that are being made or the directives that are being given, not just to her but her other players. I feel like that's the same thing we see in coaches when they're lashing out at the players that they have control of that are underperforming. You didn't do what I wanted. Like, why aren't you doing that?
I think there's a lot there. I think part of it is that's what they know.
Right.
That's how they were coached. And that's what they assume a coach is. That's how a coach acts. That's how a coach behaves. So a coach communicates. There are coaches, that can coach in that style that can get results. I can't.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm, sometimes you have to bite your tongue. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you're like, play the ball there. She's right there.
I mean, it's obvious. Yeah.
But
there are a lot of times as a coach, you want to say that, like, that, yeah. I'm, why the hell didn't you do that?
There's a there's a lot of things to consider, though. Have we worked on this in training?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we haven't. Like, how much work can you get done in a 90-minute training session with 9-year-old girls? Like, it's really focused. It has to be really focused. And there's not a lot that you can cover. So
yeah,
even over the course of a season, you can't cover everything.
Yeah,
in the course of an entire season. So if you make a mistake in something that we haven't covered, okay, that's my fault.
That's my fault. I didn't prepare you for that.
If you make a mistake because you're trying to do something that we've talked about, don't care. I don't care at all. Here's the positive reinforcement. Great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Get the next one. Now you know how to do it. Like,
yeah. Like, hey, your thoughts were right.
That's where the positivity
focus on, like,
yeah, that's where the positive aspect comes in. It's because now that player, whether they're 9 or whether they're 21,
mm-hmm.
they go, okay, I'm not afraid to try that again. If you lash out at them for making that mistake when they had the right idea,
right,
they're not doing that again.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid to do that. So now they go into a shell and they start playing at just this shadow of themselves.
Like ignoring the opportunity that exists to expand that thought process.
I think we have to create an environment across the board in training, which then translates into matches where nobody is afraid to make a mistake.
Right.
Like, you can't be afraid to make a mistake. You have to be able to take risks. Otherwise you just play boring soccer. Like, nobody wants to watch boring soccer.
Some nobody fans do.
Nobody wants to play it.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm curious, too. You see this a lot more with older players. I feel like I spend a lot of time asking this from younger players, is holding your teammates accountable, right? Like, you sometimes need to get on your teammates or ask them to do some things that they're maybe not doing, or remind them, like, hey, you need to do this. At what line do you draw, like, that accountability, and where do you try to insert yourself as a coach into that equation?
To me, accountability first has to be inward.
Right.
You have to be holding yourself accountable. A lot of times people think accountability is outward only.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do what he was supposed to, so I have to yell at him. That's not what it is. It's if I'm not doing what I'm supposed to, I expect my teammate to tell me that I'm not doing what I'm supposed to. So
think how many kids know too, right? Like, a lot of times they know.
You always know,
right?
You can feel it. You know.
You'd hope they always know. But
we got a problem.
Yeah, right. That's a different type of problem. But you hope they know. They kind of know that. But as you were saying, if they don't know that they should hold themselves accountable, like, I think that's probably where the bigger breakdown probably lies.
Yeah, which then to hold other people accountable, everything comes back to trust.
Right.
Like, if you don't trust somebody, you're not going to accept when they're trying to tell you something to hold you accountable.
Right.
So first, hold yourself accountable. Second, receive accountability from somebody else, but you can only receive it if you trust that person.
Yeah.
So that's where those interconnected relationships come into play.
Yeah.
Now, as far as accountability goes, we have to be willing to give it as players.
Sure.
Because to me, not holding somebody accountable, not holding somebody to the standards that we set, whether they're playing, whether it's behavioral, off the field, whatever, that's selfish.
Mm.
So if you see somebody doing something they're not supposed to be doing, or doing something incorrectly, and you don't say something, you're putting your own comfort ahead of the good of the team. That's what it comes down to at that point, where maybe it's scary, maybe it's somebody that they have seniority over me, but if the team is connected enough and if the team trusts each other enough, they can accept it from anybody because every member of the team is valuable.
Yeah, and everyone they're expecting that everyone else is putting themselves through that same self-evaluatory process, right?
Yes.
Like they're aware of where they're letting the team down to a certain extent, because it's not like everyone's out there executing, like you were talking earlier about like the team rating concept. Everyone out there is aware that they're not putting in a 10,
right?
Like there's no match that I ever played in college where I walked away from that and I was like, dude, there wasn't a pass that I put wrong tonight, and you know, everything that I did was exactly what I should have done.
Yeah,
there's no match that I walked away where I wasn't a little pissed off about something that I did, where I'm like, God, that was so stupid. We could have won 4-0 and I'd have been like, damn it. That one little thing tonight is going to eat away at me for the rest of my evening. And I know that's not every player is wired that way, nor should they be. But I think at least being willing or fallible enough to be like, I probably got that one a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
Is at least a step in that direction.
And what I'm saying, like, I'm not saying like you have to do this right now. Like, if you're coaching, do this right now. Like,
yeah,
it's hard and it takes a long time. Like, and you don't always get it right. Like, sometimes it doesn't work and you have to keep trying and trying and trying. But these are principles that I think I'm not willing to sacrifice. If I'm ever in a position to have to sacrifice it, I would just leave the job.
I don't know. I feel like, like tonight, like I ran a session and we're trying to work on goal kicks. I feel like that's we talked about it before we started recording. We were talking about youth goal kicks and how difficult they are sometimes. And while I was running the drill, I was like, this is not working the way I had envisioned it. And you could see the players all being like, I'm a little confused. And I'm like, I right there in front of all of them, I was like, you know what, guys, this is not working the way I wanted it to. Like, I had better intentions. And in my moment of like fallibility, where I'm trying to express that to the kids, they literally, four or five of them, like, no, I totally see what you were trying to do. And it was so like, that two-way street there, where like, hey, I goofed on this a little bit. Like, I've only been working them now with like for a month now, but that they were like, that moment when they were like, no, I got something from this still, even though I thought the whole bit was trash.
Yeah,
I was like, that was such a waste of everyone's time for them to come back and be like, no, like I got something from that.
I think that's like a microcosm of coaching in general.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I don't think they understand it at all.
Yeah.
Like, and then they go, oh, hey, here's what we talked about. And you're like, oh, yeah.
You
sweet.
Get it.
Which is exactly what you want. Like, that's why I do it, is to like create people that want to understand these concepts. Mm-hmm. And it's like, once you do, it's like, that's the magic part of it.
Yeah, I'm watching the clock on where we're recording, and I'm like, oh man, we had other things that I wanted to talk about, but it doesn't matter,
right?
Because, man, this is like the fun meaty stuff of like why I feel like coaching is important to me and why I wanted to get into it. And I feel like, yeah, I've got a lot of this soccer knowledge that's locked up in here. Whether people find that to be valuable or not is mostly irrelevant to me. What I really care about most of the time is that the kids that I'm like working with every time out there enjoyed being out there. And I always say this to parents when I have reached a point where they're like, my kid's not happy doing this anymore. I'm like, then don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, if this isn't fun, like, why are you doing this? And I watched you as I was telling that story, and when I like got to the point where I was like, oh, the kids told me, you like lit up, like you're like, oh shit, that's cool. Like,
yeah,
you're like, that's cool,
right? Like, you probably still remember individual practices that you hated.
Yes.
Right? Like, why would we do that then?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's, and I'm, again, it's hard to express if you're not in it, because I understand how sometimes this stuff can sound, to maybe people that are fans or just want to watch, and they go, oh, he doesn't even want to win.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not it at all. if I don't win a game, if we lose a game, I'm not sleeping. But it's what's the purpose of this? Mm. Like you said, we've got this knowledge of the game of soccer, but what are we doing with it? Like, if we coach 9-year-olds and tell them about soccer, how many of them statistically are going to play soccer for a living? Zero. The answer is zero.
Zero.
So
I think we you can hope that like maybe one of your players goes on and plays in college. You know, like that's a
if
you do that
gigantic
like, dang
one. Gigantic.
Like, I got one in
at any level.
Yeah.
But so how else can we use this knowledge? Can we use this to try to create better people? Yeah, like that's why I want to do it. Like I played for a long time, and I've coached for a long time, and I think that the purpose of coaching for me is to try to create better people through soccer.
Like what you just, what you have an impact on.
Yeah. Be good human beings and play soccer and have fun while you're doing it, because soccer is fun. It's fun to play, and I know it, so I want to be around it. Like it's that part's selfish for me. Like,
yeah,
I just want to be around the game.
Oh, totally. So. I mean, I think about that all the time. Is like my desire to coach is very selfishly driven. Like I want my daughter's team to be better. That's part of the reason why I got involved in it. Not necessarily because I think her current coach is lacking, but because I want to help the whole group rise up.
Yeah.
And I feel confident that I might have the ability to do that. Whether I can or not, we'll have to wait and see.
Sure.
But I think selfishly, I'm in it because I feel like I want to give that on, and because I feel a need to compete. And I know you know this as well, because I lose my ability to play at the level that I once was capable of playing at. There are only so many outlets to feed that competitiveness into.
Yeah. Yeah.
And while I want the kids to perform, like seeing the improvement, both technically and tactically, but also in like personal development, is every bit as valuable to me as like any time I've like, you know, hoisted a trophy or won a medal or, you know, achieve some particular individual goal. So that's the angle that I come at it from. I know that, you know, everyone's motivations are different, but it's always valuable and rewarding too when you come across people who look at it from that same mindset.
Right. Yeah. It's funny talking about values and culture and stuff like that. We mentioned earlier that you can implement those types of things at any age.
Yeah, for sure.
earlier this year, I coached a second grade basketball team as part of underneath the umbrella of the high school program, the local high school program, and they've got four clearly defined values at the high school program, to where the head coach met with all of the youth coaches and talked about what those values are, what the associated behaviors of the values look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was really cool to me was implementing those values in a second grade basketball team, but in the appropriate way that second graders could understand them.
Sure.
For example, tough is one of the values.
Right.
Tough in high school, tough to a high schooler means something different than tough to a second grader. Like
for sure.
Like you can explain some nuances to high schoolers,
mm-hmm.
but second grade, if you go, you have to be tough. Like they think you got to fight everybody.
Or yeah, yeah. So it's in a second grader, that's a very physical concept. Whereas in high school, like tough is it's a mental ideology a lot of times. Yeah. I can
tell you explicitly, to the high school program, toughness is positive body language. That's it. At all times.
Pretty simplistic explanation of toughness.
Right. So being able to implement that to a group of second graders was kind of eye opening. To where it's like, oh, people want this kind of stuff, regardless of
mm-hmm.
of what team they're on, what sport they're playing. They want to be part of something that feels bigger than themselves.
Mm.
And I want to make sure that in whoever I'm coaching at whatever level, they're able to feel that in some way.
Yeah.
As opposed to just saying, let's go beat whatever team we're playing next.
Like right.
That's only performance based. That's not building character. That's not building relationships.
Oh man, I think so many times we talked earlier about how we had some crap coaches at younger ages, and then we've all had some coaches that like made things click at times. And some of the best, like the most like advancing moments I feel like I received as a coach coach having an impact on my career was in those moments of loss, and how there's so much to celebrate in like the achievement of what you actually got done despite that loss, and the value that you can convey in like taking something from that. And that's such a cliche like bullshit thing that so many people say, but there really is like need in that. Like how do you turn like that loss into something that's memorable or valuable?
Yeah, I think for me it's really important working with goalkeepers, because a goalkeeper can have a worldie of a game and lose 3-0.
Yeah.
Like, so what does that mean? Like, did the goalkeeper not perform well?
Because they gave up three goals,
or one happened to be at the near post, or like, it's this stuff. All of these outside voices that come in to judge performances, whether they're goalkeeper performances or Harry Kane should have finished that, like.
Whatever.
What these outside voices that judge these kind of things and are really eager to judge for some reason. They're first of all, I think they don't understand. They just don't really get the concepts they're talking about. Because of it, they'll praise a goalkeeper for a shutout when he didn't have much to do. Like,
yeah.
Who cares then? Like if it's not so
a dude could have 20 shutouts in a year and just happen to have the luck of setting behind, you know, a stellar back line.
Right. Right? Yeah. What if you had the best center back pairing in history?
Yeah.
But so I think especially for goalkeepers, from my perspective, that's where how mentally engaged are we at any given time?
Yeah.
That's where that really comes into play. Because as much as anybody needs to forget whatever mistakes they make, goalkeepers have to forget mistakes, goals immediately.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the next one's coming and it's an onslaught from there.
Yeah.
Right. a mental onslaught in your own mind,
right?
To where you can't get out. To where, I mean, one game can change the trajectory of a goalkeeper season. We've seen it happen at the highest levels, like not just season, like a career.
Yeah,
like a one mistake can change a career, and we've seen it. And I don't want to mention the name just out of principle.
Yeah, that's
it. But I think you know.
I get it. Yeah,
but so it's just. Again, it comes back to that focus of what's my job at the moment, and how well can I do that job, and how much am I focused on doing it, instead of I gave up that goal. Maybe I should have been closer to the near post, or maybe I should have come out, but I shouldn't. Like, that doesn't matter anymore.
Like, how prepared is your team culture to accept loss?
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
You know, where do you place blame in that? And is blame even necessary, right? Like, is that a valuable thing there? It's, you can blame a moment, you can blame a decision, but those are, to me, those are teachable things, right? Like, hey, like, that's still valuable. Like, we can use that to be something that we can pivot into bigger and better things.
And why did you lose? Did you lose because you weren't prepared? If you weren't prepared, then it's our fault.
Yeah.
Did you lose because the scout was wrong? Then that's our fault.
Yeah.
Did you lose because you were making mistakes that aren't part of your defined role? Mm-hmm. Like, then that's something that we need to talk about as a player and a coach. Like, hey, this isn't your job.
Right.
We need you to do your job, but also your job needs to be clearly defined and understood by everybody involved. So there's all kinds of things that go into losses, but I think coaches by and large coaches do take responsibility on most levels, but I think fans a lot of times don't understand the responsibility that coaches take there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a dynamic, I feel like, sometimes, especially, I feel like this stuff in particular has become an increasingly larger portion of the game. You hear a lot about sports psychology and the value that's bringing into the game. I think the more and more we see coaches buying into that concept, the more likelihood that you get that kind of empathetic, you know, culture of openness and trust and willingness to be like, hey, you know, evaluating where we fucked up is a good thing for all of us. And if we can accept that, then we can learn from it and then move.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's a hard conversation.
Yeah, no one likes to hear that.
Yeah.
Coaches don't want to admit it, right? Like,
no, you don't want to. But again, that goes back to accountability. Are the coaches accountable, and are we willing to be accountable? So, hey, this was our fault. We own it. Here's how we can get better, and here's how we can get better as a team.
Yeah. Well, this has been awesome talk. Like, extremely valuable. I think if you are a younger coach, even a newer coach, or someone who's been around the game for a long time, take some of these concepts into your coaching. I feel like it's such a easy thing to do, to be a little bit more accommodating of the players that you have underneath you and try to give them a little bit of the support they need to find themselves in successful positions. And it's encouraging. Like, I always get really stoked when I hear about, you know, yourself, some of the guys that we've had an opportunity to play with and grow up with in the area that are getting to get into the upper echelons of the game and take this perspective upwards. I feel like there were so few of those type of coaches when we were growing up, when you like stumble across someone who looked at the mental and cultural side of the game, and that would have been like a rarity in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s.
Yes, I agree. And I said it before, I think before we started recording, but like, I don't have any answers. I just have thoughts that I think work for me, and I think potentially work for the teams that I'm involved in. If anything is thought provoking, then I think that's all I was trying to be here.
Yeah.
But I don't have all the answers. I'm not sure that I have any answers. I just have things that I've.
Yeah. We're not bringing you back next time to talk about this then.
I just have things that I've come to believe that I think work through my experience.
Yeah. Well, I think for me that's a good place to kind of wrap the show. We could talk about other things, but I think I would detract from like the real value and what was probably communicated today. Thanks, Adam, for coming and filling in again. I feel like this is a different show. We have literally, in the 10 years we've been doing this, we've never really taken like a coaching angle on this. And I thought it was a fun way of taking this a little bit deeper.
Yeah, it was fun. I'm glad to be here. Sorry we went off the rails a little bit.
That is the best type of shows. So, yeah,
sweet.
If you want to find Adam, you're available at your and your brother's handles.
Mine's Maloney AM34. And it's not very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some thoughts out there. Definitely some hot takes. Adam, a pleasure as always, buddy.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll do it again soon.
Jeremy, get well soon.